The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades, in the intellectual wilderness of South Florida, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Friday. We've made it. Just about made it to the end of the first full week of not only the new year, but the new decade. And when I say we almost made it, we almost didn't, right? What a precarious start to a new year. And, I'm hoping things get better. I kept saying as 2019 was winding down, 2020 has got to be better than 2019. And my goodness, how this year started. Unbelievable. So we'll be joined in the next half hour by the one and only Heather Digby Parton. Adore Digby. You know, she writes, of course, at her own Hullabaloo blog. She's one of the original OG progressive bloggers, and also writes a regular column at salon.com, where she's just been on top of everything lately. And so I can't think of anyone I'd rather wrap up the first week of the new year with. The Highlander in the YouTube chat room, hello, said that intro is too much like Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's supposed to be sort of a parody of that, thanks to our friend Boca Brittany Summers, who produced that for us. And I got to tell you, I so really like that intro more than the others we've used. And to the point where it caught up with me, because I get noticed. I get a copyright violation from YouTube every day because of the music that's used in that. It's, it may be best known as Art Bell's theme song from Coast to Coast AM, but it's a song called The Chase, or just Chase, by, I believe, Giorgio Moroder, something like that. Anyway, they don't give me a violation. They just tell me if there's ads running on your channel, they'll get the revenue. And it's not like I get much revenue from YouTube anyway. YouTube completely changed their algorithm, or however it works. So I barely get any income from YouTube regardless. So, if I lose, a couple of bucks a month, it's not going to make things any worse than they already are for me financially. So whatever, it's worth it to have that intro. But it's just one more thing and how the gods are getting me. Anyway, welcome to a Friday. I've been diligently checking every morning for a new Randy Rainbow video, because it's been over a month, and he's usually, he seems to crank them out every 3 to 4 weeks. So we're overdue. All I can think of is, he was ready to do one about impeachment, right? Because Trump was impeached. And then maybe he sort of said, well, I'll wait till after the holidays because, people are busy doing other things. And then the thing with Iran happened. And I'm guessing the news is just moving too quickly. So Randy Rainbow hasn't given us a new video in over a month. But I guess next best things. Yesterday, I played for you a song parody from the Parody Project, who I've become a big fan of. It's a guy named Don Karen. Their website is parodyproject.com, and they're on YouTube as well. And so I played the one yesterday that was Don't Lie Us Into War, a parody of Tom Petty's Don't Come Around Here No More. And it was very good. Well, today, of course, I was disappointed that there was no Randy Rainbow video. I'm waiting, Randy. We're waiting on you. But much to my surprise, there was another one from the Parody Project. They're nothing if not prolific, and they're very good at what they do. So this one, to start the show, we like to start the show with a bit of funny, something to giggle or guffaw at, because things are going to get serious for the rest of the hour, unfortunately. So This one from the Parody Project is done in conjunction with the Freedom Toast. Freedom Toast. I don't know if it's a person, a group, or what, but Freedom Toast has contributed a lot of lyrics and help to some of the Parody Project videos. So you'll recognize what song they're parodying here, and it fits. So take it away, Parody Project and Freedom Toast, getting us started on this Friday on The Nicole Sandler Show.
These days it's hard to be Republican. Giving your support to just one man. You have cringe times and you have good lines, saying things that no one understand.
How do you get to Europe? We haven't figured that one out yet. We don't use Europe.
But if you praise him, he'll tweet verbatim. Even when it's hard to understand. And if you cross hell, oh, watch out for him, 'cause he'll attack you just because he can. Stand with your man.
Or not.
Forget your pride and cling to tortured spin that rings true when hearts grow cold and lonely. Stand with your man and show how you've forsaken your integrity as congressman. Stand with your
The Parody Project. Again, with Freedom Toast. I don't know who did the singing, obviously. That wasn't Don Karen. It must have been Freedom Toast. Anyway, I can't stand that man. Oh, love it. All right. So as I mentioned, let's see, we've got Digby coming up. I'm trying to think. So yesterday afternoon, did anybody go out to one of the peace vigils? David and I did. When we finished up the show, I finished up the show yesterday. We got in the car, drove out to Fort Lauderdale, and it was not too many people there. It's a pretty sparsely attended event, and I'm guessing maybe it's because people thought, you know, the threat is off from a war with Iran. Not so fast. Seriously, not so fast. But Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Broward County, Florida, is one of the bluest counties in the nation, certainly the bluest in Florida. And just people don't get off their asses. There was, you know, I looked at the signups on MoveOn's signup site. In Miami, there were like 200 people who RSVP'd. In Delray Beach, a little town that's about as far from us as downtown Fort Lauderdale is, there was over 125 RSVPs. And the one at the federal courthouse in Fort Lauderdale had a whopping 58 people who responded. But I thought, you know what? We should be part of the showing in Fort Lauderdale to at least have a few bodies out there. So there we were, waving our signs. I made a sign. Actually, I made a sign. I've been using a repurposed sign, the one I made for the march, the Women's March, the day after inauguration. We went down to Miami. I took the old, you know, remember the old anti-war poster, "War is not healthy for children and other living things." And I copied it on a poster and I just changed war to dump, D apostrophe UMP. For those who don't remember, that was my name for Donna. It never caught on. It should have, because it's a contraction of Donald Trump without having to say the whole thing, because that's a waste of time and effort, frankly. And it, you know, and it fits, dump. But what can I tell you? Never caught on. Anyway, that sign was the hit. But Channel 7 News was out there. And we were in a live shot, but when I looked at the piece that they posted online, you know, they didn't use my sign in it, so I was kind of bummed. Anyway, we showed up. I think there are going to be more opportunities where we need to show up. Most notably, of course, at the ballot box, we need to show up to vote. But we need to show up and make noise. And if we won't take to the streets, you know, I guess then we deserve what we get. I don't know. I don't want to go there. Anyway, a lot of news going on. So, you know what? We haven't done it live yet in the 2020s. So, all right, we'll do it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live.
Okay,
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
I already wrote it, and okay.
Fucking thing
God.
Sucks.
All right. Shut up already. Man. Speaker Nancy Pelosi wrote a letter to her Democratic caucus telling them that she is setting up a vote to send the articles of impeachment to the Senate next week. In the letter, she writes, quote, "I have asked Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler to be prepared to bring to the floor next week a resolution to appoint managers and transmit articles of impeachment to the Senate. I will be consulting with you at our Tuesday House Democratic Caucus meeting on how we proceed further." So that's interesting. So they won't be transmitted today or Monday. There's going to be a vote maybe as early as Tuesday, but perhaps not until Wednesday, on transmitting the articles of impeachment. So this could be, you know, it could drag out for another week before the trial begins. Anyway, she continued, quote, "In an impeachment trial, every senator takes an oath to do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws." She wrote, "Every senator now faces a choice to be loyal to the president or the Constitution." I'm not going to read the whole letter for you because it's kind of lengthy. I will post it on the blog at NicoleSandler.com today, where I post the show, the podcast, as it were, so you can read it if you want. As for Mitch McConnell, he said that having already secured enough Republican votes for his preferred trial framework, he could start the impeachment trial shortly after he receives the articles. As you know, Pelosi and Senate Democrats had sought to pressure Republicans into accepting new witnesses and evidence in a bid to ensure a fair trial, but they were, of course, rebuffed by McConnell. What else is new? This is one of the things we'll talk about with Digby when she joins us, because an article she just posted at Salon.com today, the headline reads, "An impeachment trial is finally coming, and it could be exciting after all. Blood in the water. McConnell will allow a vote on witnesses, and vulnerable Republicans are under pressure." So we'll talk to Digby about that, among other things. But the Senate's impeachment guidelines say this, quote, "Upon such articles being presented to the Senate shall, at 1 o'clock after noon of the day, Sunday excepted, following such presentation, or sooner if ordered by the Senate, proceed to the consideration of such articles, and shall continue in session from day to day, Sundays excepted, after the trial shall commence, unless otherwise ordered by the Senate, until final judgment shall be rendered, and so much longer as may in its judgment be needful." Boy, those founders wrote in you know, flowery, funny language. Anyway, another thing to keep in mind is next weekend is a 3-day Martin Luther King weekend. So the real trial most likely won't begin until after MLK weekend, in all likelihood. Senate Republican leadership has sent signals they intend to keep the trial going most weekends. And of course, you probably know by now, you should, that every member of the Senate is required to be in attendance during the entirety of the proceedings. So that means Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, I'm trying to think if there are any other senators still running. I don't know. Michael Bennett, has he dropped out yet? The guy from Wyoming, he dropped out, right? Bullock. Yeah. So anyway, any senators who are still running for the Senate have to be in D.C. for this. Now, I heard Bernie Sanders was on Stephen Colbert last night, and Colbert asked him about that and about reports he had read that Bernie was going to have a private plane ready to go so that they can get to Iowa. This is going to happen. In the Iowa caucuses are less than a month away. So this impeachment trial will keep those senators in D.C. and off the trail for as long as the trial goes on. But, you know, they could, with a private plane, all of them pool together and fly out to Iowa, do their events, and then fly back to D.C. They can sleep on the plane. Or as Warren Zevon said, I'll sleep when I'm dead. All right. So there's that. More presidential news. Marianne Williamson officially dropped out of the race today, saying she didn't want to make it tougher for a progressive to win. My prediction is that she will sometime in the next week or so endorse Bernie Sanders, as she should. All right. This morning. Well, yeah, I guess I should back up first and tell you, I guess it was yesterday, Mike Pompeo sat for an interview with Andrea Mitchell. And she asked him about, again, the question that everyone's been asking about the imminent threat. Allegedly, the reason they killed Soleimani was because there was an imminent threat of an attack. In the briefing, the classified briefings that Pompeo and his underlings gave to the House and the Senate, two separate briefings earlier this week, representatives came out and senators, you heard Mike Lee saying, this was the worst briefing I've ever had, where they didn't say anything about an imminent threat. So Andrea Mitchell asked Mike Pompeo about that, and here was his answer.
There is no doubt that there were a series of imminent attacks that were being plotted by Qasem Soleimani. We don't know precisely when, and we don't know precisely where, but it was real.
Well, the president said Soleimani wanted to blow up the embassy. Is that accurate? He wanted to blow up the embassy.
It was his forces that penetrated our embassy just a handful of days before that. Khatib Hezbollah warriors orchestrated, directed by Qasem Soleimani himself. I don't think there's any doubt that Soleimani had intentions not only to take action against our forces, our diplomats in Iraq, but in other countries around the region and world as well.
Actually, that sounded like Laura Ingraham and not Andrea Mitchell, so I was probably wrong there. But regardless, he said the same thing, right? So in this press conference this morning, which was ostensibly about to announce sanctions on 8 top Iranian officials, Iranian steel and iron manufacturers, and 3 Seychelles-based entities, more sanctions. It's Trump's favorite word, sanctions. It was Mike Pompeo and Steve Mnuchin. And then they took questions. And when they did, reporters zeroed in on the excuse given for the assassination, imminent threat. And Pompeo keeps tripping over his own lies. Listen to this one.
Mr. Secretary, the administration said this strike was done based on an imminent threat. But this morning you said we didn't know precisely when and we didn't know precisely where. That's not the definition of imminent. The president has also suggested that there was some sort of attack being planned against an embassy, perhaps several embassies. Can you clarify? Did you have specific information about an imminent threat and did it have anything to do with our embassies?
We had specific information on an imminent threat, and those threat stream included attacks on U.S. embassies. Period. Full stop.
Really?
You were mistaken when you said you didn't know precisely when and you didn't know precisely
where. Nope. Completely true. Those are completely consistent thoughts. Which minute. We don't know exactly which day it would have been executed, but it was very clear. Qasem Soleimani himself was plotting a broad, large-scale attack against American interests, and those attacks were imminent.
Against an embassy.
Against American facilities, including American embassies, military bases, American facilities throughout the region.
So, you know, they continue lying. That's what they do. That's another thing we'll talk to Digby about, because Pompeo, who needs John Bolton when you have Mike Pompeo, who has been itching for war with Iran forever? We'll get there. All right. In other news, officials from the United States, Canada, and the UK said yesterday that intelligence indicated that the Ukrainian jetliner that crashed shortly after taking off from Tehran was mistakenly shot down by an Iranian anti-aircraft missile. It was a Boeing 737-800, at least not a MAX, and it crashed early Wednesday, killing all 176 people aboard. A spokesman for the Iranian government called the reports a big lie and said the plane's black box will reveal the true cause of the crash. Now they're saying that maybe they'll let Boeing and perhaps the Ukraine take part in the investigation, not the United States. Yesterday, as we were headed out to the protest, the peace vigil, as it were, in Fort Lauderdale, the House of Representatives was voting. They voted 224 to 194 to approve the War Powers Resolution, which would force the president to seek approval from Congress for armed conflict with Iran. Eight Democrats crossed over to vote no with the Republicans. They were Joe Cunningham of South Carolina, Anthony Brindisi of New York, Max Rose of New York, Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey, Kendra Horn of Oklahoma, Elaine Luria of Virginia, Ben McAdams of Utah, and Stephanie Murphy of Florida. And all of them deserve to be primaried and beaten. Yes. There were three Republicans who crossed over and voted yes with the Democrats. Thomas Massey of Kentucky, Francis Rooney of Florida, and Matt Gaetz, also of Florida. Matt Gaetz, one of Trump's biggest sycophants. He went on the floor, though, to explain his vote.
I represent more troops than any other member of this body. I buried one of them earlier today at Arlington. If the members of our armed services have the courage to go and fight and die in these wars, as Congress, we ought to have the courage to vote for them or against them. I support the president. Killing Soleimani was the right decision, but engaging in another forever war in the Middle East would be the wrong decision, and that's why I'm voting for this resolution.
Wow, and he did. And apparently the White House was not pleased. And trolls are now attacking Matt Gaetz. He's one of Trump's biggest flunkies, and they're all over him. It's like, you know, do not cross the king. All right, what else? Oh, this happened last night. A Department of Justice inquiry into Hillary Clinton that began after Republicans demanded more investigations into her is reportedly ending with no actual results. This one had to do with that uranium deal that they were trying to push. By they, I mean the Republicans. So nonsense. They were trying to push. In November of 2017, then Attorney General Jeff Sessions assigned John Huber, the U.S. attorney in Utah, the task of examining concerns expressed by Trump and his congressional allies that the FBI had failed to adequately investigate possible corruption during Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State and at the Clinton Foundation. The current and former officials said that Huber had nearly finished his work without finding anything significant, although his work has not yet formally ended. I can only imagine what they're going to try to throw at her now. Oh, my. So let's see. That's Trump's investigation into the oranges of the Russia probe and into Hillary Clinton. Both turned up nothing. But the probes into Trump turned up indictments and charges and more. Oh, my. Yesterday, perhaps you saw Donald Trump took some questions from the press, too. We talked about it a bit yesterday. I'm not going to rehash it. But the purpose of that address and the subsequent Q&A session was Trump announcing his proposed rewriting of parts of the National Environmental Policy Act aimed at easing regulations in order to speed up approvals of new mines, pipelines, and other projects, many of which could hurt the environment or contribute to climate change. And of course, Trump, in his usual fashion, said the changes would let builders complete new highways in a fraction of the time. We will not stop until our nation's gleaming new infrastructure has made America the envy of the world again. Because he said when it comes to climate change, he's all about clean air and clean water. Ugh. All right. What else to tell you about? All right, I got a few more stories. I'm going to skip around a bit because I don't want to be late to get Digby. Well, this is interesting. The International Olympic Committee is letting athletes know ahead of the 2020 Tokyo Games, which political protests will not be allowed. So they released their guidelines yesterday. They prohibit athletes from taking a knee, from making hand gestures with a political meaning, and from wearing armbands. Now they will be allowed to share their political opinions on their social media accounts. Wow, how magnanimous of them. Or during interviews with the press. Athletes who break the rules will receive disciplinary action from the IOC. And seriously, I'm sorry. I don't think I'd want to go to Tokyo because despite what Japan is telling you, you know Fukushima has affected the air quality all over that country. Anyway, in other news, Brexit is on. And I'm not talking about the what's her name and Harry thing. No, this time the House of Commons actually voted overwhelmingly in favor of Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Brexit deal, which means the path is clear for the country to leave the European Union at the end of the month. Johnson's deal isn't very different from the one Theresa May struggled to pass, but there was a difference in how it was executed because Johnson forced the snap election last month in which his Conservative Party won it's just saying Prime Minister Boris Johnson that caused my throat to close up. Anyway, his party won 365 of the House's 650 seats, making clearance of his Brexit plan all but inevitable. The UK will now split from the European Union on January 31st. Brexit will then enter its second phase, which involves forming a trade deal with the EU by the end of the year. And, well, good luck with that. A New York State judge yesterday... I love this story. Denied Donald Trump's effort to dismiss a defamation lawsuit against him by arguing his residency in Washington should preclude him from being sued in New York. This should give you insight, though. If that was the defense he used to try to get this defamation lawsuit thrown out, now you know why he's changed his residency to Florida, because he thinks it'll save him from charges being brought against him by the New York state attorney. Yeah, good luck with that, Donald. Anyway, this judge's ruling will allow the lawsuit by longtime magazine columnist E. Jean Carroll to move forward. You may remember in November, Carroll sued Trump for defamation over what she said were his lies, denying her public accusation months earlier that he sexually assaulted her in a dressing room at the Manhattan department store Bergdorf Goodman in the 1990s. After Carroll went public with her account, Trump denied the incident had occurred, calling it totally false, and said of Carroll that he never met this person. Those claims, the lawsuit said, were false and defamatory. Well, yesterday, a New York State Supreme Court justice not only denied Trump's motion to dismiss the case, but faulted him for failing to include a written statement to support his efforts. Things aren't going too good for old Donald. By the way, he held one of his Nuremberg rallies last night in Toledo, Ohio. You may remember there was a mass shooting in Dayton some months back, and Donald Trump kept referring to it as Toledo. So I guess, I don't know, he felt like he had to make it up to Toledo? I don't know. Anyway, so he held this rally. You know what? I was going to play you a clip, but I'm not going to play you a clip. I'm really not. I'd rather instead just get Digby on the line. So I'll tell you what, let's do that. I'm not going to play any Trump sound today. We had enough of it yesterday, didn't we? All right. So let's call Digby. And oh, we got to play the big Digby intro, don't we?
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
As I mentioned earlier, Heather Digby Parton, of course, is one of the OG progressive bloggers. She was one of the originals and is still doing it at Digby's blog.blogspot.com and also at salon.com, where you can read her a couple of times each week. Hey, Digby.
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
Okay. Happy New Year.
You too.
You know, I've been saying this all along. I kept thinking we're in for a big reset. It's 2020, as my yoga instructor says. The what did she say? The portals are open for change. I mean, she speaks in very, you know, esoteric, flowery, metaphysical terms. But, you know, I didn't notice any difference from 2019 to 2020 in that the shit storm is just continuing. And if anything, it's gotten crazier in the last 10 days.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if if the portals are open for change, it's nothing that says that it's good change, right?
Right. Oh, no.
It just means that, you know, something's happening. And, of course, you know, this recent, you know, horrifying confrontation with Iran, I think, was sort of a, you know, was a clue about the level of intensity that we're going to be feeling for the next year, I think. I mean, and I've sort of been predicting that anyway. I mean, going into an election, I think Donald Trump is getting desperate. His dementia is really kicking in. I mean, there's a lot of things that are happening. And not just here, but around the world. I mean, there's, you know, we're not the only ones. Look what's going on in Australia, for instance,
so
which is
horrible.
To me the biggest story, really, because it's so unprecedented. And we're going to be seeing more and more of that. So you pile, you know, economic dislocation and you know, climate, the effects of climate change in a situation like that. We're seeing it happen before our very eyes and all the political upheaval that comes with that. And, you know, you're seeing that everywhere, all over the world. You're seeing this kind of political, the tectonic plates are shifting, and we just don't know at this point which way it's going to go. And obviously, it could go in a very good direction as well. I mean, this could be a moment of you know, huge positive social change if we're able to pull that together and we're lucky. This could be something that shakes loose a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on for the last half century and maybe moves into a more positive direction. So I don't mean to sound like, you know, oh my God, you know, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Right.
But it is, you know, huge change does feel like it's happening in a number of different ways. And it just depends on which direction we as a human race decide to take it.
Well, exactly. And by the way, I just got to mention, you mentioned Australia, and it's just heartbreaking. I see the, you know, the photos of the animals being rescued. And it's heartwarming to see people stepping up to take care of them. But hearing the reports that upwards of a billion animals have been killed by these fires, then you see the graphic representations of the continent of Australia laid over the United States to give you a you know, comparison size-wise. And Australia is about the same size as the United States, and you see where the fires are, and you realize just how devastating this is. And then at that stupid press conference yesterday that was all about Donald Trump announcing more rollbacks to environment, right, to protections against climate change inducing measures to make it easier to green light new mines and pipelines and other fossil fuel projects. He's asked, do you still think climate change is a hoax? And he said, I don't think it's a hoax. I know. I believe in clean air and clean water. What the fuck is he talking about?
He was babbling incoherently as usual. And this one was really bad because the rules that they were rolling back, these environmental regulations, have been in place for 50 years.
Yep.
And the reason, and they have been very effective. I mean, the reason why, I mean, I live in L.A., right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid and we would come through L.A., my eyes would burn.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, the air was so bad. I mean, it was just absolutely gray. You never saw a blue sky here. I mean,
yep.
It was really, really bad. And it was through all of these kinds of environmental regulations that have been in place for 50 years that they fixed a lot of that. I mean, L.A. is still a polluted city, but nothing compared to what it was and nothing compared to what it would be.
That's
if
right.
They hadn't done that. I think people would, I don't think it would be livable. I don't think you could even, could live here without a, you know, an oxygen tank
mm-hmm.
if they hadn't done this. So here he is in the midst of all this. And by the way, it isn't just him. I mean, this is important for us to keep in mind. The Prime Minister of Australia is another wingnut who, you know, why these people, why all these Western countries are suddenly deciding that this is what they need. I mean, this is something we really have to consider, what's going on in our culture that's allowing this. this guy is a, is an absolute coal fanatic. I mean, he held up a, you know, a lump of coal in the, apparently in the parliament, waved it around, you know, this is our future. I mean, it was disgusting, and people were just, he's in the midst of criminalizing environmental protests
wow.
in Australia.
Wow.
And, oh, you know, man. He won on the basis of this immigration thing where he was telling, you know, saying that they would not accept any refugees off the boats. They were having a refugee crisis as well. It's happening all over the world. And so he's this real, you know, this super right wing nut. And by the way, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to religion in any way, but this guy is a super hardcore fundamentalist
wow.
Pentecostal. And by the way, so is, you know, Mike Pompeo,
that's
so
right.
is Mike Pence, and
yep.
there's a whole bunch of people
yep.
in charge. And, you know, so when they see this, when you look at Australia, and, you know, it looks like hell on earth, right? I mean, it literally,
oh, horrible.
It's,
yes.
the skies
it is.
Are red,
yep.
and you look at that and you say, this is, you know, this is the apocalypse. It's an apocalyptic vision. It's a dystopian apocalyptic vision. You know, you have to wonder if these guys, like Morrison in Australia, mm-hmm. Pompeo, the rest of them, aren't kind of going, hey, you know, good. This,
yeah,
know, this is what we've been waiting for.
They
want to
bring
you know,
on the rapture, right? They want to bring about end times. And, you know, I guess.
And that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it really does. It's terrifying. So,
it really is.
Yeah. And so just the, you know, the hypocrisy, but this is indicative of the Trump administration. It's all that. It's all what I call opposite world. So you have Trump,
yep.
you know, doing this event in order to announce that they're rolling back environmental protections that, as you say, you know, have made Southern California livable and got things back on track so you can breathe there and have helped to clean up the air and the water. All the while, though, we're watching the, you know, the sea levels rise and we're watching the Arctic ice melt and we're watching fires take over continents and things like that happen. All the things that have been told are going to happen. And he has this event to say we're rolling back the environmental protections. But of course I believe in climate change. I'm all about clean air and clean water. He doesn't have a fucking clue. Or he does.
He doesn't
and
know
it just,
what it is.
Yeah,
he literally does not know what climate change is. He doesn't, you know, he always says that. Oh, I believe in clean air
right.
and clean water. Well, good
that's,
for you.
Yeah,
that
has nothing to do with
to
climate
do with
change.
The subject, you know.
Oh my God! But this is par for the course for him. It's
sure.
this is the hypocrisy. Oh. Just like, and this was what got me last week when pressed for their reason for assassinating Soleimani. Intelligence. We got great actionable intelligence, and there was an imminent threat. Well, this administration has spent the last 3 years. Berating, dissing, discounting our intelligence community, saying they don't know what
know.
The fuck they're doing. And now all of a sudden, all it takes is one word that you believe them and you couldn't even share that intelligence with Congress because you were sure that Adam Schiff was going to leak it. Come on.
Oh, that.
Come on, man.
That's totally ridiculous.
Ugh.
And of course, now we know after listening to them today. You know, they had Trump
nothing.
Out there last night at
yep.
his rally just spewing a bunch of lies, apparently, that they were going after our embassies. You know,
yeah.
he said it yesterday at that avail. He
yep.
said, well, they were going to blow up.
Yeah.
They were going to blow up the Baghdad embassy. And then last night at the rally, he says, well, they were going to blow up a bunch of our embassies. Pompeo comes out today and says, well, you know, we knew that they were that they were planning these things. We knew that those things were being planned. It's like, you know, everybody in the know is going, well, yeah, they've got plans for that. They have had for the last 25 years.
Right.
That doesn't make it imminent.
Nothing
and,
imminent.
Well, you know, more importantly, that is illegal. You're not allowed to go assassinating people or doing this kind of thing without
then,
consulting with Congress.
Right. And then,
unless they're about to be blown up, the bombs have been placed.
Exactly.
And
so, bring on the intelligence, but it doesn't exist because they make
that's
shit up.
Not.
Right?
Well, they lie. Yeah.
They lie about everything. And so, we're all of a sudden now supposed to believe them because they say they have an yeah. actionable intelligence from the intelligence community that they have spent the last 3 years dissing. It just is all, it is just, it's enough to make your head explode. And now here we are at this crossroads dealing with impeachment. And your piece today, Digby, up at salon.com, headlined, an impeachment trial is finally coming and it could be exciting after all. And then your sub-headline says blood in the water. McConnell will allow a vote on witnesses and vulnerable Republicans are under pressure. We know that he'll allow a vote on witnesses?
We don't know it, but I just read, excuse me, that was weird.
You sound like me.
I just read an article that Susan Collins is working with a small group of Republicans to allow witnesses, which I had sort of heard yesterday, but I hadn't seen it reported, so I didn't say that in my piece. What Pelosi managed to do, look, I mean, I think you and I've talked about this. We both thought this should have been a bigger impeachment. They should have gone after, you know, Trump for the corruption, for the Russia stuff. You know, I mean, there was a huge amount that they could have thrown at this. They decided to do what they're calling skinny impeachment, and they had their reasons. A lot of it had to do with electoral politics and what have you. But setting all that aside, we are where we are. And I think that Pelosi was always, no matter what kind of an impeachment articles they passed and on what basis, she was dealing with the weaker hand than McConnell. Because, you know, obviously, she has one House of Congress, but McConnell has, you know, the Republicans hold the Senate and the presidency, and McConnell was always going to have the ability, along with his robot army of Republican senators, to acquit the president pretty much. No matter what he did.
Right.
So we knew that going in. But what Pelosi managed to do with this delay, which was what my piece was about, was to, first of all, give some breathing room between the hearings and now, which makes the whole case is going to be fresher going forward. People aren't going to be quite as, you know, oh, what did Fiona Hill say and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's going to be a more, when they present the case, it's going to have a fresher feel to it. The House managers, when they do that, presumably
right.
Adam Schiff, I assume, will be the lead on that. But also, she knew, and I think we all did, that there were a million other shoes to drop on this, right? And they have been dropping. Between Rudy Giuliani running back and forth to Ukraine and proving that this scheme is still live and they're still trying to do it, he's been doing that since the impeachment, and giving interviews to New York Magazine. I'm sure you talked about that one,
yes.
You know, where he was drunk.
And he called in.
He called and
yelled. And then he yelled at her, at Olivia Nuzzi, who wrote it halfway through it. And he's yelling at her. And she said, well, read the rest of it and then call me back. And he did. And he called her back and yelled at her again.
I know. I mean, it was really one of the more absurd moments in this whole Ukraine saga.
Yeah.
I mean, I still can't believe. And then Rudy went down to Mar-a-Lago, and they asked him, will you testify in an impeachment trial? He said, no, I want to try the case. And everybody's going, what?
Yeah.
What, Rudy, are you confused? Because that's not how this works. You know, you're not trying the case. You're supposed to be defending the case. I don't know who he thought he was prosecuting. But in any case, there were a lot of other things, too, that came down about Parnas and Furman, the two, you know, Ukrainian Americans who were working with Giuliani and Trump on this scheme. And there was Russian money flowing in. Parnas wants to talk to the Intelligence Committee. There was, you know, there's just been a lot of information, including emails that were obtained through the Freedom of Information Act that showed tremendous amounts of direction by the president personally. And in these emails were from people who weren't interviewed at any point. The point being that it just reinforced the need for witnesses in the Senate trial.
Well, of course.
Because people actually didn't know that some of these people were involved. This guy named Michael Duffy, who was part of the Office of Management and Budget, Mick Mulvaney, and of course John Bolton.
Right.
And John Bolton has been a key figure in all this. Now, I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. I have absolutely no idea what game he's playing other than, you know, ginning up interest in his book.
Mm-hmm.
But his place in this has helped Nancy Pelosi's scheme, which is to say that, you know, it won't be a fair trial unless we have witnesses. And at the end of the day, I suspect that we will have them. But if we don't, what that means is that all those vulnerable senators have to go out, all the shoes that are going to drop between now and the election, including John Bolton's book, by the way.
Yep.
They're going to have to go out and defend the fact that they didn't have a fair trial in the Senate. They refused to listen to anybody, that it was rigged, that they basically ran a cover-up for the president. Now, that's not much, but it's better than nothing. And I think that that's really where the Democrats were left with this because of the structural impediment to actually taking Donald Trump out. And the other part is that it's driving him nuts. Now, the bad part of that is, and I think I opened my piece today with that in my Salon piece, you know, one of the reasons why they were able to convince him to assassinate General Soleimani was because he was hysterical over impeachment.
Right.
And we watched his, if you were watching his Twitter timeline, he was literally losing his mind.
Yeah, well, he lost that a long time ago, but yeah.
Yeah, in that moment of high stress, Mike Pompeo and Mike Pence and the rest of the Iran hawks around him, which according to the reports are that, you know, he had a very solid team of people pushing him to do it this time. I guess this new Joint Chiefs guy, General Milley, he's a real piece of work,
too.
Oh,
he's one, too.
Huh? Pushing hard with Lindsey Graham on the golf course pushing from his direction, and Trump was in a moment of, you know, high stress and desperate to try and take control and to try and somehow, you know, change the trajectory of what he saw and what's happening with impeachment. Now, you know, we know what he thinks about this because he tweeted back in 2012 about Barack Obama.
Yeah, he's going to start a war with Iran.
Over and over again.
He
said he's going to, you know, start a war with Iran because he wants to get reelected. So we know that's how he thinks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was wagging the dog. But nonetheless, they were all there pushing him and pushing him for this particular thing. And I think, you know, that's the downside of this. You know, the more you drive Trump crazy, the more it empowers these crazies around him and him, who we already know is crazy. So, you know, this is kind of a high stakes issue here. But hopefully, you know, what it does mean is that Susan Collins, you know, God help us that we're depending on her again, whatever, that she has enough. They need four senators to vote for witnesses, and if that happens, then I think all bets are off. Not that I think he'll be removed, but I think they might be able to get
a few Republicans.
Republicans to
vote
for removal.
Right. Heather Digby Parton is with us. I love talking with you because there's so much that has been swirling around. I've got to wonder why Rudolph Giuliani is still walking around scot-free, why he has not been questioned. He is acting in an extrajudicial way, if that's the right term for it. He's like taking government into his own hands. He's just acting like a man without a country, doing his own thing, damn be everyone else, anyone who interferes. Isn't there a problem with him acting as an official representative of the state when he has no official role in the government?
Well, you know, I mean, there have always been these people that they would send, you know, sort of a special envoy kind of thing.
But
you know,
he's
not
one. I
remember they sent Bill Richardson to North Korea. You know, they do that. But this is different.
Yeah.
Because he's not operating on behalf of the United States.
No.
He doesn't even pretend to.
Right.
He's operating on behalf of the president's personal political, you know, agenda.
Yep.
That's a whole different thing. Not to mention the fact, Nicole, one of the Ukrainian shoes that I keep calling Ukrainian shoes are dropping.
Uh-huh.
One of them that dropped over the holiday period was that, you know, in that New York interview, New York Magazine interview we were talking about, he said that, you know, he's got side deals going in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And he's making money on all this stuff. And by the way, there's also Russian money that was paid to Parnas, who was his partner, client, whatever he was with Giuliani, a very strange relationship there. But that money came from a Russian oligarch. And it was $1 million that Parnas didn't claim. He went to his wife, which, you know, supposedly I guess that's supposed to make it okay. I don't know. But, you know, there's all this money floating around here, too. And while Rudy's out there, you know, hammering on, you know, that pathetic Hunter Biden, you know, this joke.
Right.
And he's out there doing even worse. I mean, he's basically selling out the United States national security himself for money and for Donald Trump's political benefit. And to answer your question, why is he still walking around free? Honestly, I don't know. You know, he was the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, and I've always kind of wondered if they're not going to, you know,
protect him
one of their own. And, you know, he could, I don't know what it would take for them, because you would think that they would have at least sort of named him as a, as a subject or something in the investigation of Parnas and Furman.
Right. The fact that he's just seems to be skating scot-free and doing his own deals, it makes me as a citizen really concerned. So that's a big question mark for me. The other one, of course, you know, John Bolton, you mentioned he's got this book coming, and then he signals the other day that I will testify if subpoenaed. Why doesn't the House subpoena him? And do you think they will if the Senate doesn't?
You know, I don't know. And I just have, and I could be wrong here. Maybe I'm giving people too much credit. I have a feeling that there's something to do with this Bolton thing that we don't know, mm-hmm. that there's more to it than we can understand, than we know about. Now, it may be bad because Bolton is a total, you know, I mean, he's a lunatic.
Yes.
You and I've talked about
yep.
him for years,
yep.
you know, long back when he was, you know, having dinners with Pam Geller, you know, at the Shrug, you remember?
Uh-huh.
I mean, he, you know, the guy's a real piece of work. And he, and we know that.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing some game here. Now, a lot of people just attribute it to his desire to make a lot of money on this book. But he's
right.
been paid a $2 million advance. So, I mean, is he going to make more than that? That seems unlikely.
Right.
So I don't really know what game he's playing. And I know that he talked to Mitch McConnell before he made the announcement that he would testify. He didn't talk to the White House. But, you know, I wonder if he does testify, if it's actually something we want to hear. Because,
right.
you know,
and
I
if we can believe him.
Lying, do you?
No, I was just saying, if we can believe you know. Him. And he's serving an agenda. You know, I always thought once he was out, that made us safer when it came to Iran. But as you point out in another piece at salon.com, Digby, your last piece before this new one is headlined, "Who Needs John Bolton? Mike Pompeo has been pushing Trump into war with Iran all along." And so, you know, any adults that were in the room are now gone. I was just saying the other day, whoever this anonymous is who wrote that New York Times editorial and now the book, as anonymous, needs to come forward, needs to out themselves, and needs to tell us what the hell he or she knows. Because this is dangerous. We've crossed the line. This whole thing with Iran and assassinating Soleimani, this takes us to another realm. And that person, if this person is indeed a patriot of any sort, needs to take off the mask and come forward and tell us what they know. Because it's serious now.
Totally agree with you, and I hadn't even thought about that. But boy, is that person ever, you know, whatever game they're playing
right.
as well. It is long past time. We've got ourselves, you know, we're now we came very, very close to the brink
yep.
of an extremely deadly, lethal military action
yeah.
in Iran. And by the way, it was only due to the Iranians
yes.
showing restraint
yes.
that it didn't go any further. Because if we'd have left it up to the guy in the White House, if they had done what people, you know, sort of predicted or thought they might, or if they had done what people who say they're crazy, if they had done what they said they would do, Trump, you don't even want to think about what Trump
no.
was going to do in reaction.
No.
So, you know, we're lucky that the, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, that the Ayatollahs, were the adults
exactly.
in that situation.
And talk about opposite world, right? I mean, who would have
exactly.
thought? You would think, okay, the Ayatollahs, the crazy religious
the
leadership.
Religious fanatics.
Yeah, in Iran, they're going to take any incursion by us, you know, knocking off their second in command. Hello, that's an act of war. I thought they would respond. When I heard they bombed a U.S. military facility where troops were housed, I thought my stomach dropped. I was watching MSNBC
that.
And I saw some people on their air talking about casualties. They were reporting mm-hmm. it without confirming it. And boy, was I glad when those reports turned out to be not true. But not thanks in any way, shape or form to Trump or anybody in this administration. Who would have thought in opposite world that we'd be thanking the Iranians for showing restraint?
I know. I mean, it is opposite world. I call it bizarro world.
Mm-hmm.
We both have a similar sort
yep.
of take on this. And it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Where you see this thing where you're going, wow, you know, I mean, this is opposite world. And that was one case. And I think, you know, we don't know where, you know, what will happen in the future. I think Trump has demonstrated that he's willing to use military force or do something dramatic in that regard in order, you know, for his own political purposes. I mean, it's obvious. I am not going to accept. I keep hearing all these pundits going, well, you know, it's not really people saying wag the dog, and that's not really right, going after Elizabeth Warren because she, you know, she sort of indicated she thought it was a political decision.
Of course it was.
I mean, this is ridiculous. We're in the middle of an impeachment proceeding, and the president goes and assassinates the second highest, you know, leader in Iran, the guy who's been wandering around, you know, unmolested for years and years, and suddenly he decides now's the time. And by the way, we know there was really no evidence to support that. Come on. Of course it was a political decision. On his part, he was wagging the dog. His people, of course, are Iran hawks and religious fanatics who have been pushing for this for years and finally got their way because they took advantage of Trump's need to, you know, soothe his poor, you know, emotional state over impeachment. And you know, this is I just don't think there's any way to see it any other way.
No.
That is what he did. And I can't believe that people are being cautious. We don't want to say that he wagged the dog. We can't use the word assassination. I mean, give me a break.
Okay. You know what? You know? I'm so sick of the media biting their tongues. When he delivered that address the other morning, when he was slurring his words.
Was he high?
He was so hopped up on something. I mean, Howie always talks about him snorting Adderall, the nose sniffs and the out of breath. I mean, he walked through the door and it was like he had just run a mile around the White House and came in all breathless because he couldn't make it through two words without, you know.
It was obvious.
Everything.
Obvious that he was on something.
Yes.
I don't know what it is.
And
I mean,
how does the media not call that out? I didn't hear one network news or cable news host, you know, seriously saying there is something wrong with this man medically. Somebody needs to come in and examine him.
And remember, you know, they weren't quite so kind to Hillary Clinton.
Oh, no.
When she had a coughing fit or she, you know, collapsed when she had pneumonia.
Yep.
I mean, boy, they were all over that. They ran
all
it on a loop.
It.
Do you remember? It was just her collapsing in front of the car over and over and over and over again. I didn't see anybody, you know, there were people on social media who put together all the sniffs and the snorts and the deep breathing that he did yesterday. I didn't see anybody do that in the media, the way that they did that to Hillary Clinton.
Nope.
No, let's look at this. Let's get a close-up. Slow it down.
Can you imagine if Obama ever walked up to the podium and delivered an address like that? They would have been screaming from the rafters. Do something. The man is about to keel over. He's going to stroke out.
Call an ambulance.
Yes.
There's something wrong. I know, and you could even see from the look. Yeah, I don't know if you noticed this. That you know, for one thing, he had all these generals. You know, all this salad. These guys with salad all over their uniforms.
Yep.
Lined up behind him. You know, presidents don't normally do that. That is really an unusual thing. I don't know if I've ever seen it, except you know, at one of these when he addresses the troops. You know, I've never seen it in the White House where they got a bunch of generals, and then they have him come out from the Oval Office with the sunlight behind him, like he's emerging.
It's all TV production,
like
right?
He's descending down from heaven.
Yeah.
And he comes out there. But I did notice that the generals, as he was talking, snorting, sniffing, you know, grunting, slurring, which he does all the time and nobody ever mentions.
Yep.
They were looking at him like he was kind of, you know, there were a couple of guys with a look on his
face.
Yes,
and at one point he seemed to give away a military secret, something about we're developing these hypersonic weapons. It doesn't mean we have to use them. And the one general behind him, his eyes like went, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah, he's probably giving out top secret classified information because he's an idiot. He doesn't have a clue. And he runs around Mar-a-Lago for days in advance of the strike, bragging that something big is going to happen in Iraq. You just watch. Because he's got to show he's a big, strong, powerful man and not the stupid little diapered baby that we all know he is. God.
It's the truth. And then they get mad. They say, well, we couldn't let Adam Schiff know because he would have leaked it. Trump was blabbing it to every caddy and every Mar-a-Lago member. He was blabbing it to the omelet
guy.
Anybody who'd listen knew about it. So, you know, come on. I mean, these people are, it's funny. I mean, we have to laugh because we have no choice because we will be crying all the time
We still have a year to go. We have been
for the last week on the brink of that very, very serious and dangerous moment that we all knew was probably going to happen, and we've seen what will happen in a true catastrophe if Donald Trump, if it happens when Donald Trump is president, and it's not good.
We got to guard against that. November 3rd can't come soon enough. Digby, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Next time I need to just a lot more time because we could go on for much longer.
well, we could go on for days, Nicole. You know that. I do know that. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
A nice way to end a week.
Yes. And thank you. And we'll talk soon. Digby, find her at digbysblog.blogspot.com and at salon.com. And you have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back to do it again next week. Bye.